So just a really brief injury update. I won't make it exhaustive. If there's anyone that I miss, feel free to ask me about those guys. But really the two that are front of mind at the moment, one from the game that was very minor, Asava Radigalia, and with the break it looks as if he'll be available, which is really positive for us. And Sam Menegola is the other one that's starting to get to the point where he's going to play some footy. We haven't decided whether he'll come straight back into the AFL team or not, but irrespective, he won't play this week, but he's getting closer. The others, it's really status quo, but happy to elaborate if you'd like me to. Yeah, he's available to play. So he's... If you had spoken to him prior to the Richmond VFL game pre-bye, then he would have said he was ready to go, and probably he was, but it just didn't make much sense to us to have him play limited game time, then have the week off. He wouldn't have gained that much, and he's had 2 weeks of really good training and is ready to play well at AFL footy, at VFL footy in our view.
What's the bye week been like for you, Chris, and I guess the rest of the team?
Yeah, I mean, it's been good. We have traditionally found it difficult to assess training form, especially as it translates into match form. But we were very impressed with the way the boys came back and trained. It's given us the opportunity to work on a few things. It's given a few of the individuals a bit of a chance to recover from some niggly injuries. So there's the ones that have been spoken about, Radigalia, and the like. But there are some other guys, as is the case with most AFL footballers halfway through a season, who have got some bumps and bruises that are feeling demonstrably better for the week off. So we're confident that our preparation's been good. And it's a big week for the club too. I mean, Cam Guthrie plays his 150th and Harry Taylor plays his 250th. It's unusual that you have two players with significant milestones like that in the same game. So that's been part of our focus as well, making sure that, you know, if we needed any extra motivation to play well, we want to do it for those guys.
Chris, I know how you love to talk at great length about historical form, but the bye week has obviously been a bogey week for you over recent years. Have you done anything different this year to get the guys up and running as quickly as possible?
Yeah, tweaks. But interestingly, I did bring it up post-game after in the Richmond week, and a third of the room had no idea what I was talking about, which kind of speaks to the fact that, you know, we have some new people in the team and it's a new year and it just feels different to us. So you're right. I generally think that 2012 doesn't have much relevance to 2019. But I've said a few times publicly and certainly privately that one of the things we've endeavoured to do this year is when there's an issue, even if it's really minor, just confront it. Don't pretend it's not happening. And so we spoke about it last week, but we're done speaking about it now. We've got to focus on, you know, the really positive things that we've got going into the game, and you know, the most important of which is playing well, continuing to build some good form. But as I said, those two individuals have got some pretty significant milestones, and they're much loved members of our team. And you know, I don't think we need more motivation, but you know, in the you know, in the rare situation that we do, you know, that should be enough to get us up and about.
What did you tweet?
Well, it's a good question because I find it hard to remember exactly what we've done in previous years. I mean, some of the examples are so long ago, but it's not so much a matter of saying, looking back and thinking, were there any things we didn't get right. The way we run our program, we tend to be more forward-focused anyway, so it's a matter of rather than looking at the old template and saying, how do we change that? We'd look at it with a fresh slate, think, how do we you know, prepare our players best given the current situation? So it was really, if anything, a tweak based on what we've done with longer breaks. And we have had a few this year by virtue of our schedule early on. We had a 5-day break, which means on the flip side you get some 9 and 10-day breaks. And we perform well off those longer breaks, in part, I think, because we just trained a little bit harder early in the preparation. So that would be the biggest thing if you were to finger one.
You've mentioned the milestones a couple of times. Do you mind just elaborating on Harry, I suppose, what he's been able to do on the footy field, but then also the character, this colourful one down
the club? Yeah, he's a character. We've already seen some vision of Harry, and I think the whole footy world admires the way that he's approached his role and the professionalism with which he's approached his whole career. I think there's great admiration around for the key position defenders who have played on some of the greats of the game, and even looking at some of the vision of him over the last 249 games, he's played on some greats and rarely had his colours lowered, at least not in repetitive clashes. So we admire him for that, but we also admire him for the quirky ways he go about it. He's a unique character. He does make us laugh consistently. I'm not sure it's always deliberate, but he is different. There are so many parts of the way Harry goes about his craft that we'd like to be passed down to our younger players, but to be honest, there are some things that he does that no one could coach. They're uniquely Harry.
Yeah,
I mean, I can't even keep up with them. There are still things that I learn every day. I suspect that that's an example of a type of thing that I prefer not to know about. But it is, it's all part of the makeup of Harry Taylor. He's always gone about it his own way. But often when you get those quirky types, the implication can be that they're not as professional as some others. I don't think I've met a more professional player. In fact, the one thing I would say to younger players is you should aspire to be a lot like Harry, but you don't need to be as anal as he is with his preparation to be a good player. But that's just where Harry's got to. He feels that he needs to make sure that literally every box is ticked before he feels as if he can play well. And again, I admire it, but I'm glad I don't have to go through that process. Oh yeah, I think he can. Yeah, but that's an opinion based on what we're seeing right at the moment. It's difficult to forecast, and we have had a lot of experience with trying to make these decisions, hopefully in consultation with the players themselves. It's almost always the case that they will have a big say in it. I haven't really had the conversation with him around the future, mainly because when I've tried to bring it up, he's just said, "I'm only concentrating on this week and this session." I think that's a really good approach for the older players to take. The one thing I will say, I think I've said it earlier in the year, we're not in the position where we've been, say, in the previous 5, 6, 7 years, where we have just had a list management imperative that we make some room on our list through older players finishing up. We've brought in 40-odd players over the last 4 years. We've had plenty of picks. We've got plenty of youth. It's not as if we couldn't keep going with an older player or two if we so chose.
Do you have a bit of a bond with Cam, that his debut was your first game as coach of the club?
Yeah, I'm aware of that. Off the top of my head, I think he's the only player that came in that year that's still on the list. And not only did he come in at the same time as I did at the end of 2010, but he debuted in round one of 2011. So I guess I do feel like we've been on a similar path. He's been a great supporter of our footy club, and his teammates love playing with him. Again, he's different to Harry, but he's also different to most as well. He does it his own way. I just love how self-effacing he is in the way he goes about it. He doesn't, and I think this is pretty reflective of where our team's at the moment. He's an individual that doesn't desire any more accolades for himself than he gets. And I think, you know, that's the definition of a team-first player, and that's one of the reasons I love him.
His form recently has been particularly good. Has he got a better idea of where he fits into the team this year than perhaps in the last couple of years?
Maybe the last couple of years, we've, not sure experimented is the right word, but we've certainly explored the idea of him playing a little bit more in the back half, even though his progression was probably pointed towards him being a midfielder. So this year we've well and truly gone back to saying, no, he's a midfielder for us, and who maybe can play back every now and again. And he's not on his own in that respect. We've had quite a few players, I think you've heard me say that, Harry Taylor's another one that springs to mind. You know, what's been best necessarily for Harry as an individual hasn't always been what's best for the team. And I think Cam's an example of one that suffered a little bit because of that. So being back in the midfield in his probably most comfortable role, I think, has helped.
What have you made of Port Adelaide's form, Chris?
Their best is good. The numbers reflect that as well. So they've had a little bit of a strange month, I guess, with the trip to China. They're over in Perth last week. They haven't had a lot of continuity, which I think they'll get over the next month, I think, playing at the Adelaide Oval. So in that respect, it's been a bit stop-start and hard to get a really clear reading on how they've been playing. But if you just look at the numbers, I mean, the contested numbers are really strong, and they, when they use the ball the way we think they would like, it's pretty hard to stop. So I suspect that's the way they'd be thinking, that they'd back themselves to play an attacking brand of footy against us, and I think they've proven more than a few times this year that when they do that, they're very difficult to stop. So a few players coming back in as well. So again, it's that balance between, you know, the stuff you've heard me talk about before as it relates to us. And what's the balance between getting your best players in and having some real continuity and cohesion, you know, with the same group of players. But I don't think I'm convincing Ken not to bring Ollie Wines or Charlie Dixon back. That's my best try. Give him another week in the SANFL Open. Not personally. yeah, my wife keeps asking about Marty and Pat Dangerfield's expectant child. So yes, we are, to an extent. It's any day. It's not really my strength. I tend to be the last one to know with this sort of stuff. But Paddy's got his routine set. He's got every contingency accounted for. So yeah, it's a good time for him. I don't think it'll stop him playing good footy, put it that way.
Chris, can I just ask, the Jaden Stevenson situation obviously brings gambling back into the spotlight in the AFL. Has the AFL got a gambling problem, do you believe?
Depends how you define problem. I think we've got to be careful not to conflate the multiple issues as they relate to gambling. This, to me, seems to be a relatively isolated incident, at least this year, that doesn't involve problem gambling. And then I think the broader question that the whole industry and probably the whole of society is grappling with is how do we help young people in particular manage their gambling to the point where it doesn't become a problem. And we're talking about illegal activity that's clearly causing a lot of harm, not just in the AFL or with young people, but across society and across the world in general. So it tends to be a little bit easier to take a position when we're talking about something that's illegal, but this is something that's allowed, you know, across the board as long as you're over 18. But clearly it's not good for everyone, so it's a good discussion to have. And I'm actually really confident. We only met with the Players Association last week, and we have ongoing conversations with people from the AFL and internally, that there are good people working really hard on this. So I think it's a little bit disingenuous to say that not enough has been done. I think it's a fair comment to say it's still a problem, and I don't think anyone denies that. But to say that people aren't working hard on it, I think is... I can't really work out why people would say that, because I just don't think it's the case.
Do you have concerns for your players?
Yeah, always. Yeah, but I don't know of any issues in particular, and I wouldn't tell you even if I did. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't be vigilant. If we were 100% confident we didn't have any players with any issues, we'd be just as vigilant tomorrow as we are today, because the potential for harm is pretty real. I think everyone acknowledges that.
Does the AFL wedge itself a little bit by accepting so much money from gambling companies?
It's such a complicated issue, and it's not a question that I can do justice to in, you know, the 30-second answer that I'd give you. I think it's a really good conversation for everyone to have and look at all the issues. I would just caution people on making snap judgments on things that they don't understand completely, and I include myself in that category. So it's a good question to ask. Let's keep asking it. Get some good answers, hopefully, but I don't think the moral high ground is the right place to be on this issue.
Chris,